chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm really happy to be back with you. Got a great show in store for you, all kinds of news to cover. We've been covering a lot of ground on the website. If you're not following the antimedia.org yet, make sure you are, because we're going through like over 10 stories a day now at least. So there's a lot of ground to be covered on the radio. And of course, all the articles are either written by our awesome journalists or aggregated from a bunch of independent news websites. And we're trying to crack through this propaganda scheme that's been hypnotizing the populace for who knows how long now. I mean, we're seeing the results of it as we speak with the way the current affairs are going around the world and here in the United States, with the rise of a fascist and the rise of what I like to call an imperial oligarch in Hillary Clinton and a national fascist in Donald Trump. Just to give a quick shout out to our main promo tonight, because you know, that's what we're dealing with now. As we see the political field narrowing down, things aren't looking too bright for Bernie Sanders, and you got to give it to him for putting in a good effort to fight against the Hillary machine. But you know, it's not over yet, so let's not jump the gun there. But you know, it's beginning to look a little bit more inevitable that we're going to have Hillary Clinton. Anyway, we're going to break into that stuff once I get through a few of these things that we got to talk about. Anybody wanting to join the call tonight, feel free to call us. We had some interesting callers in the last show, and we've been having some really good callers lately. Not as many trolls, but if you do want to call in, feel free to join us. 718-717-8296 is the call-in number, and if you do call, make sure you keep your microphone muted, keep your radio muted as well. And we'll get to you in the order that you call based on your area code. And pretty simple rules. We'll talk about what you want to talk about, or we'll ask you a question. You can ask us a question. You know, we'll figure all that stuff out as we get to your calls. Anyway, let's introduce the panel here, because we got one of our awesome journalists with us, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man. I'm doing good. I like the meme. I like the... I'd share it on my Facebook page, except that Facebook doesn't show my posts to my friends anymore, so it would fall on deaf ears.
Oh, well, hopefully you still got friends, right?
No, don't have those either. Except for you, buddy.
All right, well, there you go, man. You can come visit me here in San Diego whenever you want, and we can talk.
I was just there, man. It was great, and thank you for hosting me, man. It was great.
Yeah, it was really good to have you in the studio. You know, it's
I'm really glad that you're able to join us most of the time here. Are you back in New Mexico yet, or are you still in Los Angeles?
Yes, I'm in Albuquerque, leaving tomorrow for Sedona just for my sister's wedding, and then I'll be back. But I'll be back in SoCal sooner than you can say oligarchy.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, it is really nice to have you in the studio. I think DB is going to be back pretty soon here too. So,
oh, sweet.
Hoping to have him on the him in studio as well pretty soon here. And you know, it's always some interesting topics and conversations when we're all in the studio together. I'm having a little trouble getting DB on the call tonight, but I'm sure he'll call in once he gets his technical situation figured out, and you know, maybe we'll get some special guests. I'm not sure if Claire's going to call in. We may also have another special guest to talk about a new movement going on. We'll have to wait and see if he calls in. Otherwise, we're going to start breaking into this news. Jake, it's just you and me for now to kick this thing off.
All right, let's do it, buddy.
There's a lot of stuff, a lot of ground to cover here, and I'm working on the note. We have a shared notepad there. I'm going to be working on that some more as we go through here. But first, let's go over these elections. Trump picked up a bunch of delegates yesterday. He won in Florida. He knocked the hell out of Marco Rubio. Rubio's out of the race. The impossible happened. I never thought it was going to. I guess if they have the brokered convention and all that stuff, I guess they could still try to bring Rubio in. But he's just not that gifted politician that I think the political establishment thought he was, man. He's got a great story. He's a good-looking guy. He's Hispanic. You know, he's the kind of guy that could win a lot of votes in a perfect vacuum, you know, if we're not including this crazy-ass election cycle that we got going on right now where Donald Trump is sucking all of the air out of every single room in the country. And so maybe in a perfect political establishment vacuum, Rubio is a guy that is very electable. But with Trump over here, we got a story that we just covered on the Anti-Media by Claire. I was hoping she'd call in to talk about this, but we could talk about this right now. Donald Trump received, according to research done by media coverage, Donald Trump got $1.9 billion in free advertising from the media because of the amount that they cover him. And so Rubio was not able to compete with that, and he got beat in his own home state by Trump.
Yeah. A big part of this Trump momentum is kind of a media-fueled obsession, even though they're largely critical of him. It's kind of just like stopping at the scene of an accident. They can't help themselves wonder how this is happening. And, of course, it's happening for a very obvious reason. One, the Trump campaign made some very, very scientific calculations prior to this campaign as to what kind of rhetoric would get a certain base of America. And so all the anti-Hispanic, anti-Muslim talk was very calculated, and they must have done a lot of focus groups. So there's that. There's also the fact that the general population is just absolutely disgusted with establishment politics right now, and they're literally willing to do anything to not have a normal politician. Unfortunately for Rubio, although I do think in 4 to 8 years' time or whatever, he could be a more seasoned politician, he exemplified perfectly the kind of politician that people are just sick of right now. And of course, it's both on the left and the right. But the free advertising, and of course the issue with the next debate, Trump is saying he's not going to participate, and Fox is probably just going to cancel the debate because they won't get, without Trump, they're not going to get any ratings, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy how much power this guy is wielding now, and now it's pretty much, I have no doubt that he's going to basically become the Republican nominee. He's just got too much clout at this point, and
yeah,
you got to hand it to him, you know.
It'd be political suicide for the Republican. The Republican Party would literally self-destruct if they tried to run a third party at a brokered convention, but you know what? They may be okay with that. They seem to dislike Trump so much, they may take 4 years of Hillary over Trump rebranding the party.
Now, one of the things I wanted to bring up here for – I'm sure there's some people out there that are actually supporting Trump that are listening in tonight. You know what he's doing on Friday and the reason why he's not going to that debate, right?
Yeah, he's doing a big speech, right?
Yeah, and it's going to be to AIPAC. The big Zionist, I don't know what you want to call it, neoconservative Jewish Zionist group. Basically, they're responsible for the U.S.'s steadfast support of Israel. And even though, you know, there's plenty of evidence of human rights abuses, I mean, you can call them war crimes, just horrible, basically, what's going on over there in Israel with the Palestinians. And that's what Trump's doing on Friday. He's giving a big speech to AIPAC. And, you know, this is probably one of the most well-known lobbies in the country outside of big oil and maybe big pharma. I mean, AIPAC is the big Jewish lobby. And they don't,
interesting. Definitely been one of Trump's weak spots is his stance on Israel. So this is obviously a very calculated move.
Yeah, man. And you know, the thing is, though, AIPAC doesn't speak for Jewish people. I know plenty of Jewish people that are not in favor of what Israel is doing over there. But they speak for the big power interests, the military-industrial complex. And that's what AIPAC is doing, and they control a lot of these politicians. They got a huge grip on the Republican Party and the Democratic Party as well. I know Hillary Clinton has at least some ties to them as well. So you know, this is something that, you know, people that are like, oh, Trump's this, Trump's that. No, Trump's not this and that, man. Trump is going, and he's going to go pander to AIPAC on Friday. That's what he's going to go do. So you know, there's that. Let's see. Moving on to the Democrats, and we got a bunch of people calling in. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to everyone tonight. We are going to get to some, though. I'm not sure. I think we might have Manny on the line. Is that
we
you, Manny?
Listen to the people, Nick.
What's up there, Nick? What's up there, Jason?
What's up, Manny?
Well, I'm ready to, you know, back in the trenches and stuff like that, and we're going to be, you know, doing a big hike down there towards the border. Stuff like that, and just basically in the anniversary of the march when we were working with Chavez, you know, Delano all the way to Sacramento, and so this is the perfect timing because it's kind of basically coincidence with the same date that Delano to Sacramento was with the same thing of the Jornaleros from San Quintín and stuff like that. So we're going to be down there by the border in San Diego County, and some of our people are going to be on the Mexican side. And so I'm kind of really looking forward to it, you know, stuff like that, because it's starting to get ridiculous when somebody makes $1 an hour. You know what I mean? Come on, dude. Really?
Yeah, man. Some of these guys that are made, some of these farm workers that are growing the fruit that people over here in the U.S. are eating are making like $7 a day for their wages. You know what I mean? And that's like ridiculous. It's like almost like slave conditions, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully you'll basically give us some coverage on that, you know, and stuff like that, Nick, you know?
Hell yeah, of course, man, of course. And we've been talking extensively in the last few shows about NAFTA and about, you know, why these candidates like Trump and Sanders are gaining a lot of followers because of the fact that they've been kind of rebelling against NAFTA and the TPP and stuff like that. You know, and that's one of the reasons why they are getting like that economic resonation going on, and people are following and buying into that. And it's resonating with a lot of people that have lost their jobs or people in poor economic areas. And so, you know, it's going to be really interesting how this is going to turn out. Before we move on from this whole Trump thing, Manny, I want to get your opinion, man. What do you think this guy, if he does get elected, I mean, what do you think he's going to be able to do with the immigration issue? Is he going to be, he says he's going to deport all these people. He says he's going to build a big wall. I mean, is he just talking out of his ass, or do you think he's serious?
Well, I think it's a big circus, but I think he does have that hate inside of him and stuff like that, just like Arpaio in Arizona and stuff. And so he's already made an ex-president, Fox, over there very mad in Mexico. And so with Trump, it's kind of hard to say. Sometimes he'll say one thing, and the next day he's retracting what he said, you know. And so it's really hard to read this guy and all that. But one thing for sure is he's dangerous, and he's created hate regardless. Where you have all these mobs that have been attacked, graffiti, and stuff like that. I mean, what's been happening to our Muslim and, you know, brothers and sisters, it's just really, I mean, it's just amazing that hate that, you know, I have seen in a long time from a guy like him and stuff like that, and taking all responsibility. I'm amazed they haven't arrested him, to be honest with you, Nick and Jake.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the thing is that give me 1 second. We got a caller from 310. The caller from 310, can you keep your microphone on mute? We'll come to you in a few minutes, but we keep hearing a little feedback. That's where we're hanging up on you. But if you keep your microphone on mute, we'll keep you on the line, then we'll come to you in a few minutes. So, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about here on the show about the Trump phenomena is that, you know, it's not so much that Trump is like all of a sudden making people come out and do a bunch of racist stuff. And there's no denying the underlying racism in a lot of his support. And, you know, there's plenty of people that are going to say, oh, well, Trump's not racist. He's just telling the truth and stuff. Well, I don't care. I don't care what people, how they want to twist his words or how they want to downplay what he says. If you look at the videos from the rallies, the people that are there, there's been plenty of clips that show some extremely hateful, racist people. I've seen people telling people to go back to Auschwitz. I've seen people telling people to go back to Africa. I've seen videos of people telling some reporter to go back to Iraq. I mean, a bunch of just very racist, hateful stuff going on. And so there's no denying that. Now, the thing is, though, is that it's not like Trump all of a sudden like made a bunch of people racist overnight. That's not what happened. I mean, people have been kind of on that racism stuff for a long time, and it was dying down for a while, you know, and it was kind of going underground, or maybe people were just weren't expressing it outwardly. There may be people were racist, and maybe they kept it in their own homes. They were just like, "Oh, I'm racist, but I'm not. I don't have the balls to go out in public and be racist against other people because, you know, it's just not acceptable anymore. It's not, you know, it isn't the 50s anymore." But you know, I don't know if it's all this stuff with the what's been going on with the Black Lives Matter movement and the riots and stuff, where it's kind of scared a little bit. I think scared the white community a bit, and now Trump comes along and he's talking this stuff more publicly.
What's up, guys?
And he's saying this stuff more publicly, and all of a sudden it's just like, all these people come out of the woodwork and now they're supporting him and they're being more open with their bigotry and that kind of thing. So I think that's a lot of it. I don't think he's making people racist overnight. That's not it. The racism is always there. It's just now it has a way to manifest itself. You know, what do you think about that?
You're talking to the caller, right?
I'm talking to Manny. Sorry.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, basically, you know, you're right about that. The problem is he has just brought it more into light, and now people have things that it's acceptable, so they're coming out of the, basically, like you say here in the United States, out of the woodwork and stuff like that, you know. The only thing about some of these people, you know, kind of wanting Trump to win is because he has been saying some truths about the Republicans that, you know, nobody's had the guts to say how the system really sucks, you know. But the problem with him is that he has initiated violence and hate and stuff like that. And we just can't have somebody like him as president and stuff like that, because if we elect him as president, what's that tell you about the United States, you know?
Exactly, exactly, man. And, you know, my prediction, like I was talking about this yesterday with a friend of mine. My prediction is that, you know, Trump knows what he has to do to win the Republican primary, you know, because we're really talking about two separate elections here. First, you got to win the Republican race, and then you got to win the general election, which is like much more broad and much more bigger issues and things like that. So, you know, Trump took a gauge of the Republican electorate the last time around in 2012, I think it was, when he was coming out with the birther comments, and he's like, "Well, is Obama even was he even born in the U.S.? Was he born in Kenya? Let's see his birth certificate." I mean, this is what Trump was getting famous for back in 2012. And being the resourceful billionaire that he is, I'm sure he had a bunch of internal polling numbers. He had a bunch of resources, and he gauged the you know what the Republican electorate was thinking and what was resonating with them. And he took that and he said, "Okay, I'm not going to run 2012." But then he's like, "I'm going to go run in 2016." And that's exactly what he did. And he came out, and now he's just saying a bunch of stuff, and this is the thing that I'm not sure about. I don't know if he means what he's saying. I don't know if he actually thinks that Muslims are bad people. I don't know if he actually thinks the majority of Mexicans are bad people, or that he wants to deport all these people. What I do know is that is what he has to say to win the Republican nomination from the Republican electorate. And Manny, as you were saying, that tells you a lot about the people in the United States. I mean, this is resonating. Just last week, he finally went over, or actually this week, I think on Monday they announced it, either Sunday or Monday, that he finally got over 50% support from Republicans. And that was the first time he's gotten that high. And so that tells you this message is resonating with people. But I think once he wins the Republican nomination, you're going to see him tone it down a lot. You know, I'm not sure if he will or not, but that's my prediction. And that he's going to have to tone it down if he's going to try to win the actual election. So, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. But, you know, this tells you more. It tells us less about Trump and more about the Republican electorate. I think those people are very, very misled. They're really angry. I think most of their anger stems from economic issues. I guess a lot of the working white middle class got robbed blind over the past decade and a half, two decades, especially following the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And so they're really angry, they're really scared, and they're looking for answers. And Trump is unfortunately able to tap into some fears that are misled. He's not aiming the conversation in the right direction. I think Bernie Sanders is a little more accurate, aiming at Wall Street and aiming at the corrupt electoral system and stuff like that. I'm glad that Trump finally came around and said that they need to audit the Fed, but you know, that was really just coming after Ted Cruz. I haven't really seen him say anything else after that. So, you know, Trump is throwing out a bunch of stuff that is emotionally appealing, and it's not actually getting to the root of the issues here. We're talking about radical Islam, and if Trump were being more honest about that, he would talk more about not banning Muslims, but maybe banning us from overthrowing Muslim countries. So, you know, that's one aspect. The other aspect is, you know, on the economy, it's not Mexican people coming over here and taking people's jobs. It's actually, you know, the opposite. We're displacing a bunch of peasants in Mexico because of our trade policies, while at the same time enriching a bunch of corporations that are able to leave the United States and exploit extremely cheap labor in other countries like Mexico and China and places like that. You know, and so I think he's at least partially right when he talks about the trade issues, but then when he talks about, well, we have to deport Mexicans because they're the ones causing the economic issue, that's just off target. That's not accurate. And but he's doing that because the Republican electorate believes in that stuff. That's what they think is the truth. And so I don't know. I mean, it's just I don't know what to make of it. Let's go to a couple of these callers here to see what they have to say. First, I want to go to the caller from 310. Thank you for waiting on the line. What do you make of this Trump phenomenon?
Yeah. Hey, guys. Robert Crawford with NowDaily.com. Hey, you know, I think you made a lot of really good points where the stem root of all these issues, and I think a lot of the hatred, comes down to money. Right? People are scared because they're not financially secure. So I think the Fed is obviously the main root of that cause, at least in the United States. But I think what's happening with Trump is kind of giving an opportunity for people to start looking away from Republicans and away from Democrats, and might actually create a situation where we could get someone like a libertarian into office out of this turmoil. So I think there's actually an opportunity here that most people really aren't talking about right now.
Yeah, that's a really interesting prospect. We actually covered a story on the anti-media today, and thanks for calling in. You can stay on the line here. We're going to have a little discussion about this because we covered a story on the anti-media today about how over half of Republicans say that if Trump becomes a nominee, that they'd be willing to actually vote third party. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got the Hillary Clinton phenomenon. I saw today from the Huffington Post, and I think the number could actually be higher, but the Huffington Post is saying that over 30% of Democrats that are supporting Bernie Sanders will not vote for Hillary Clinton if she becomes a nominee. So I think we're seeing very much a bipartisan distaste for the two-party system, and I think maybe a lot of these voters, I don't know how high to put this percentage. I know that recent polling shows that 40% of people are now like politically independent, and they no longer affiliate with either party, and that actually would be a majority if the independent parties were able to pull together a ticket that was a big maybe what we can call like a big tent ticket, maybe with a libertarian and like a green ticket together running, and some kind of uniting administration. I know it's a long shot, but I think a lot of people would agree that that's whatever it is, it would be better than Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump becoming the nominee.
Yeah, I think the battle between those two are, you know, it's a bad decision or a worse decision between the two of them. So you really have to look at a third party. The only one that's on all 50 states, and they really make it difficult to get on those ballots. So Libertarian's really the only third party that would actually be on all the ballots. Unfortunately, they don't really have that strong of a campaign, and I think financially they're not as strong. And the problem is the media doesn't mention them at all. So until the media starts talking about it, I don't think people are really going to pay attention to a third party. But if people were educated on the idea that there's really two choices in politics, right? On one side you have authoritarian collectivism, and then on the other side you have individual freedom. And how Republicans, whether it's Trump or an establishment or a Democrat, they're both authoritarians, right? They both want government. They both want police to throw you in jail for laws, and there's so many laws that we don't even really know what's on the books anymore. And we need to start going the opposite direction. And that third party is really the only option for that. I think the biggest hurdle is educating the population on it, though.
That's a, you know, great call, man, and I'm glad you brought that up. We did a story last week about one candidate that's running in the Green Party by the name of Jill Stein, and how she was one of the only mainstream presidential candidates that actually supports Edward Snowden and his respects him as a whistleblower and actually wouldn't put him in jail, because even Bernie Sanders has said that he would put Edward Snowden on trial and you know, try to hold him, probably put him in jail for some time. And then Trump has in the past said that, you know, even floated the idea of executing Edward Snowden as well. So obviously there's not anything there, and Hillary Clinton hates whistleblowers. I mean, she would be probably worse than Obama on the issue. So third party is a great way to go. It's much better than voting for either one of these Republicans or Democrats, I think. Anyway, great call. Thanks for calling in. Feel free to continue listening on the call. We gotta move on to the next story here. What was your website again?
It's nowdaily.com.
Now Daily. Awesome, man. I'll check it out.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
That's always the one prospect. I mean, I know Jake's favorite candidate, maybe probably D's Nuts. I don't know about Manny, but Manny, last time we spoke, you were on that Vote for Nobody train, right?
For nobody, right in, and I got over a million people that said they would actually put that in the ballot, so that's pretty good, you know?
Not bad.
Yeah, I did hear about somebody wanting to run as an independent, though, if for some reason something happens to Bernie, and that was Jesse the Body Ventura, so I don't know how serious he is, but he looks like he's serious, you know?
Yeah, Jesse Ventura would be a cool candidate to run on a big third-party ticket, maybe.
That'd be awesome.
I think if the Bernie Sanders crowd were to jump on that with maybe him taking Bernie as a VP, I just don't know if that would happen. Highly doubtful. but it would be interesting to see.
Just make sure you have your backpack, man, because in case Trump wins, I would recommend you might enjoy moving to Acapulco, okay?
Yeah, I was thinking that. We talked about that last show a little bit. And that's one benefit of listening to this radio show, is that we'll be able to decode what's actually going on. We're not going to allow our listeners to get caught up in Neo-Auschwitz or whatever you want to call it. We're not going to be sticking around to when it's too late. I mean, the whole key now is to fight fight now, you know, fight now before it's too late. That's what we got to do. You know, we can't sit around and wait for stuff to happen. And, but, you know, even when we do fight and stuff still does happen, bad stuff, you know, at least we're going to know about it and we'll be able to see it coming and people can make their own, you know, their own plans to deal with what's coming. I don't know if it's going to get really bad or not. I'm actually more frightened of Hillary Clinton than a Trump presidency. I think that the one thing that has working in the public's favor is the fact that he's got like this existential opposition already. I mean, he can't even have rallies anymore without them being interrupted, protested, and in the case of Chicago, like actually shut down, you know? And so, if Trump were to become president, it'd be like Bush all over again. He wouldn't be able to do anything without getting eaten alive by every angle, including people out in the streets. There'd be like a whole new anti-war movement again. I mean, that kind of stuff is not going to happen with Hillary Clinton. And that's the problem with Clinton, is that she comes across as like this harmless and just easygoing, work with everybody type of thing. When in reality, I mean, Clinton is maybe one of the most bloodthirsty politicians in the modern era. I mean, she's done a lot of bad things. She, according to a recent report, she tipped the scales in Libya and basically was the one of the main factors that made Obama overthrow the government of Libya, Gaddafi. She was very hawkish with Syria and helped make that issue worse, the civil war going on there. In 2009, Manny, I don't know if you heard about this, but apparently there was a military coup in 2009 down in Honduras, and Hillary Clinton, it turns out she was basically complicit in overturning that government. And keep in mind, it was a democratically elected government of Honduras, and now that country is now Honduras is in a very unstable state. It's become very violent. As we know, many of the immigrants coming up from the southern border are coming from Honduras, and you know, that's a huge issue that Bernie Sanders has yet to go after her on. But it just seems ever apparent that there hasn't been basically one case of regime change or foreign intervention that Hillary Clinton has actually been opposed to.
You know. Yeah, that's correct. Well, I'm kind of, you know, basically one of the things that she was very involved is, you know, this activist that she just got was killed, you know, basically after really criticizing Hillary Clinton and everything, and all of a sudden she disappeared. They killed her, you know, and stuff like that. And they also shot down her partner, and now they arrested him and trying to make him look like the one that he's the one that killed him, you know, and stuff like that. And so we're losing a lot of activists in Honduras, and that's really, really sad, you know.
Yeah, man. And, you know, we're going to have a special guest on in a few minutes. I want to get through one big story that Jake had up today. And this kind of goes into what Manny was saying as far as like being prepared for what goes on with Trump. And actually, our guest is going to talk about that, too. But Jake, you wrote a story today about how the U.S. government actually does have a zombie preparedness plan. And it's kind of a lighthearted story and stuff. But I mean, this is a kind of funny, kind of not funny, because I mean, I guess it's good to be prepared for anything, right? What can you tell us about this, Jake? You there? I think Jake.
Sorry, I had my microphone muted. The story goes back. The Center for Disease Control did it for a little bit. And sorry, I got to mute one of these ads. All right. And then, so they recently declassified the Department of Defense plan, and a site called the Black Vault posted two documents, which he got from the NSA. And yeah, it's just creepy. I mean, they're doing it. They're using the zombie thing as a kind of like lighthearted way, you know, to approach emergency situations, but the language they use, the rhetoric they use, is pretty creepy. I mean, for one, they refer to martial law multiple times, and so it gives you the feeling that even in these kind of fictitious scenarios that they're coming up with, that the idea of martial law is kind of ubiquitous.
And then they list 8 kinds of zombies, okay? And, I mean, this is crazy that the government is doing this. I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with the zombie genre, but I literally cannot believe that it's called the Con Plan 888. They talk about pathogenic zombies, radiation zombies, evil magic zombies, space zombies, weaponized zombies, vegetarian zombies, and that's zombies that only eat plant life but could nevertheless cause massive deforestation and elimination of basic food crops, and chicken zombies. And these are old hens that can't lay eggs anymore, so the farmers euthanize them with carbon monoxide and stack them in a pile, but the chickens then kind of crawl their way out, and the document says the chicken zombies are simply terrifying to behold. Likely only to make people become vegetarians in protest of animal cruelty. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Like, I can't believe that, you know, they're talking about space zombies and evil magic zombies created by occult experimentation. The only thing that makes sense to me is the weaponized zombie, which is the idea that a terrorist group would have some kind of pathogen that they would, you know, send in a kind of bomb and then cause us to turn into zombies. And that's, I mean, it's not going to be like movie zombies, but, you know, some kind of hideous psychotic disease taking over, which isn't to suggest that we don't already have a psychotic disease that's taken over our mentality.
Yeah, I was going to say, they forgot to list voting zombies that are out there for Hillary Clinton. And
they forgot to list Democrats and Republicans. But yeah, it's a weird God, at one point they talk about how hand sanitizer kills 99% of germs. But it hasn't been tested on biohazard level 4 pathogens like Ebola, much less a zombie outbreak. I mean, it's just, you know, it kind of shows the absurdity of some of these government dossiers. And then, of course, they say firepower to the head. The human brain will still be functioning in the zombie state, but it is universally agreed upon that the only actually active part will be the brainstem. I don't know what they're talking about, but maybe they're surreptitiously planning some kind of false flag zombie uprising.
Now, this stuff came out like a while back about how there actually was a plan, right? And I think there was even some video footage of some like tactical training they were doing, some like anti-zombie tactical training that I remember seeing.
Yeah, it's old news, but this is the actual official declassified document.
Yeah, and so this stuff is coming.
It's way weirder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and this stuff's coming off of like FOIA requests, which is like the Freedom of Information Act, and it's kind of when the government has to give up some documents and they redact some of it and stuff. So very interesting, very real, as weird as it sounds and funny as it may sound. You know, this is something that the government is spending a lot of money on and stuff like that. So,
oh, they also – one more thing. They also talk about where is it? God, it's okay, they talk about a form of surveillance, actually. And I don't really know what it's called, epidemiologic surveillance for the purposes of watching changes in the disease vectors. So I guess I need to look more into what epidemiologic surveillance is. But I think that's yet another ominous note.
Yeah, I think that has to do with like tracking changes in viruses and the way that they're spread and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, that kind of makes sense. That's something they'd want to look at if there was a zombie outbreak actually actively going on.
Just watch out for those chicken zombies, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. I won't say what I was going to say. We've got a special guest now. We've got Justin King from the Fifth Column News and also a journalist with the Anti-Media. And he's going to talk a little bit about a new movement going on that is kind of in opposition of Trump and a lot of this fascist attitude rising up here that we're seeing in the United States now. Justin, are you on the line?
I am. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. How you been?
Good, good, good.
So you got a new project, and we're a part of it as well a little bit here, and we should have a story out on it tomorrow, I believe, on the Anti-Media. But it's called the White Rose Society or the White Rose Revolt. What's it called?
Um, I there's an, it's decentralized. So there's the White Rose Society. I think there's two of those. And then there's the White Rose Revolt, which is more for organizing the actual activities under.
Nice. So, you know, tell us a little bit about this because it has some historical roots and now it's resurging in the United States. What's it all about?
Well, the original White Rose was a group of students that at great, great, great personal risk, most of them were beheaded, opposed Hitler. And they did it through nonviolent means, using information and intelligence as a weapon. Basically, they you know, geez, at the time of the day, they would use leaflets and put them in universities and so on and so forth. Eventually, most of them were caught. Some of them were slated to be executed, but the Allies showed up and liberated the town they were in prior to them being executed. But quite a few of them were beheaded. They were under a guillotine. So,
and so they were anyway, they were like an active resistance within like Nazi Germany, right?
Yes, yes, of Germans. Yeah. They were the German. They were not good Germans, to use the term. They actively opposed everything, and they tried to wake up those that had fallen under the fascist spell.
They were truly anti-establishment, I guess you could say, unlike Trump. And so now this movement is now being applied to the United States, and I guess it's probably because of Trump and in a lesser way, I guess a little bit having to do with the whole election altogether. So, you know, what is this new movement and what's it all about?
Well, it was definitely crystallized by Trump and the threat of brown shirts. I mean, for lack of a better term, some groups saying that they were going to forcibly, you know, remove protesters and stuff like that. You know, everybody jokes. Everybody says their political opposition is like Hitler. Trump is a fascist. He's not like Hitler, but he is a fascist. There's 14 points to fascism. He's exhibited 13. The 14th is rigging elections. And he can only do that once he's in power. So, I mean, he is a fascist. There's no debating that. And there was one person that actually could have changed my mind about this. His name's John Kiriakou, former CIA counterterrorism expert. You know, I mean, you know about the waterboarding program because this guy was willing to spend a couple of years in prison to make sure that we found out. Basically, he worked for the establishment, and he saw the light, and he left. He was the one person that could have changed my mind. Today, actually just a few minutes ago, I found out that he had written an article on the subject, and we'll be publishing it on the fifth column here in a little bit. But it, you know, it starts off, and then the guy's telling me, he's like, well, he says he's not like Hitler. And I was like, well, man, I can't believe, you know, I was so certain. You know, what does he say? He's like Mussolini. So, I mean, this is a man that truly understands the rise of dictatorial regimes. It's there. It is a fact. The man's a fascist. Trump is a fascist. Other candidates have fascistic elements to them. But this man is a fascist. The movement is to oppose Trump, of course, or anybody else that comes along that exhibits these qualities. It's dangerous because people, especially listeners to this show, know people are disaffected. They're disillusioned. They want change. They'll take it from anybody. Let's make sure that the change we're getting isn't for the worse. And I think with Trump, that's what we'll end up with.
Makes a lot of sense. I've got your article up here on the fifth column called The White Rose Revolt. And you list off a lot of the things that are kind of signs of Trump's fascist tendencies here. And I want to talk just about a couple of what I see as maybe the more important ones or the more blatant ones. First off, I mean, just recently he said he was going to more or less target media that said bad things about him. I mean, that's one thing to me is just like, I mean, the United States has a First Amendment. There's a reason why it was the first one And Trump's already talking about, we're going to change this so that we can start suing media and, I don't know, probably shutting them down. And, like, he literally was getting cheered on when he said this because people have gotten such a distaste for the corporate media, I guess, that now they're willing to scrap the First Amendment because the media sucks so bad. I mean, you don't have to watch that crap. You could read sites like the Anti-Media or the Fifth Column. but, you know, Trump has openly been attacking the media, and he's been surging because of it. That's one thing. For me, that's pretty huge because that is a direct attack on us. And, you know, who knows what? We're constantly publishing things that are counter Trump, and so we would probably be one of the people that would be wound up targeted if he did do what he's saying he wanted to do. As we mentioned actually earlier in the show, he floated the idea of executing Edward Snowden. This was like a couple years ago, but you know, that's one thing. So he has no respect for transparency, no respect for whistleblowers. Again, back to the First Amendment, free speech, that kind of thing. Maybe a little lesser known aspect here, and this is one that's been surging, and he's been talking about it a lot with the recent protests and the more intense protests going on at his events. But with the cops, and apparently Trump is a big supporter of militarized police, and you know, we've seen what he's done. He's been preemptively getting people removed from his events, and having the police manhandle people. I mean, Justin, what can you tell us about Trump's stance on the militarized police?
He's all for turning over military equipment. We're talking MRAPs, all the stuff that we finally got stopped through the police accountability movement. You know, or at least slowed, anyway. As far as automatic weapons, you know, grenade launchers, armored vehicles, that kind of stuff, he wants to turn it all back and make sure that if they can get their hands on that. He said that he wants a stronger and larger police force. He said that the police are the most mistreated people in the country, and the one that got me, that just really blew me away, he wants a mandatory death penalty for anybody who kills a cop under any circumstance, and he has threatened an executive order to do that. Now, if you actually study the Constitution, he can't do that. It's a state law, but he's, I mean, the only way he'd be able to do that would be to, I don't know, nationalize the police force and turn it into some form of SA, I guess. But yeah, he is not anti-establishment. Everything the man talks about, once you get past the, you know, well, the people in D.C. hate me. Once you get past that, everything he says, it's consolidating all of the power into his hands.
Exactly. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the last show about how much of the Nazi government came to power democratically. You know, Hitler initially tried to overthrow the government. That's when he went to prison. He wrote his book. His book got popular while he was in prison. He came out, and then the Nazi Party became pretty prominent democratically. They started winning elections. They started getting majorities in certain towns and certain regions in Germany. And then, you know, Hitler made his way into the government through democratic support in many ways, and it wasn't until he got in that he started consolidating power, whether by using false flags or by manipulation and propaganda and stuff like that. And so this is one of the things that we were talking about on the last show, is that, you know, Trump may come to power democratically, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to be able to turn the situation in the United States into a fascist empire, whatever you want to call it, fascist country, pretty quickly. You know, it's possible, and I guess that's why this White Rose movement is really kicking back up here. So what are some of the tactics that you guys are thinking about using to try to combat this fascism rising in the United States?
Well, we've got different people heading up different departments, I guess you could say, within it to get the information out about how to oppose them. I'm more focused on writing the stuff for the intelligence side. Basically, what we want to do is when these brown shirts, militias, whatever you want to call them, and I really object to the term militia because I support the militias. These guys are not militia. You know, these are not your average run-of-the-mill militia. These guys are nuts. We want to be able to identify their leadership. That's the first most critical thing we can do is we need photographs of them. We need to know who they are. From there, you can boycott any businesses they deal with, any political candidate that gets support from them in their hometown at a local level, to basically turn them into a pariah. More importantly, if things do go bad, we know who the control elements are. And that goes, that's a little bit further down the wrong line, worst case scenario type thing. But knowing who the command and control is of your opposition in a real resistance movement, that's the critical thing. You need to know that first. That's what I'm focusing on. There's some other writers who I don't know want their name out there, so I'm not going to name them, but they're writing stuff about how to disrupt their social media accounts, how to politely encourage them to leave, stuff along those lines. And we're going to distribute all of it under the hashtag of White Rose Revolt.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is a interesting development. I'm not sure how many people have been heard about this or been following it, but there's like a what seemingly spontaneous movement to start building up some kind of armed Trump support here with, like, as you said, a brown shirt militia, I guess you can call it. But you know, this is something that I think it's going to be an interesting task to deal with these people, because I think a lot of the Trump people are under some kind of, I don't want to call it a spell, but for lack of better words, people are under Trump's spell, and there's going to be hard to say, hey, dude, stop supporting Trump. Here's why. And people are just like, screw off, you know, whatever. You just hate him and you don't want to hear the truth or whatever. I think one thing that would be that's pretty important is to keep in mind that these hardcore, like, racist people that are actually, you know, Trump followers that really believe in this banning Muslims, deporting anybody that's an immigrant and that kind of thing, I think they make up a very small minority of what Trump's base really is. And so one of the things that the Nazis used to their advantage was fear, you know, and a small group, a minority of people, I think, really identified with the Nazi message to the core. But because they were so aggressive and able to use fear, they turned everybody else that was in the middle. I was like, oh, kind of just like, well, I don't know. I'm not racist. I don't think the Jews are bad. But, you know, I don't want to look like I'm not a patriot, so I'm not going to say nothing. And, you know, I think that's where we have to really fight the battle here. I don't think it's going to be really hard to try to get these really hardcore brainwashed Trump people to jump ship. But I think we get the people in the middle that are less, you know, that are just kind of on the sidelines watching all this stuff happen. You know, sooner or later, when the people are on the sidelines, if they wait it out too long, it's going to be too late. And then they're going to be too scared, or they're going to be coerced into just jumping in line and just letting this stuff happen. And that's very much what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, so I think part of the battle is hitting that middle ground.
A thought that's occurred to me, and I'd be interested to hear Justin's opinion on this, is all it would really take, in my estimation, is another terrorist attack by a radical Islamic group, and I could easily see Trump doing a Japanese internment-style camps for Muslims. I think that would be almost inevitable.
Right. I mean, when he's talking about his counterterrorism plan, which, if you talk to anybody that actually understands counterterrorism, it's almost as if he's reading the ISIS strategy guide and doing what they want. It's not just is it morally wrong, it's strategically and tactically incorrect. But yeah, he definitely did it. When he was talking about it, he said, we would have to do unthinkable things, quote. And this is after he had already named off torture and all kinds of other stuff, you know, registering all Muslims, all that, and more. It's just unthinkable. I don't know how much more unthinkable you can get than torturing people. We definitely, definitely think that he would open up internment camps.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is that, a lot of the stuff that Trump's openly talking about, it's already there. It's already on the books. In fact, we've got a story on the anti-media that's it's already on the site. It's going up on Facebook tomorrow about it's actually a video from Ben Swan about Trump's comments on killing the families of terrorists. Now, this is completely egregious when you look at it. It's like he wants to not only go kill terrorists, but he wants to bomb their families out too, which is just unthinkable. Killing like innocent people just because their family is doing bad things. I mean, that's just, you know, that by that logic, you can kill almost anybody in the entire country because they've got a family member that's a criminal. You know, and so that logic just doesn't hold up. But here's the thing that really hits. Here's the thing that really makes it seem a little more realistic. Obama has already done that stuff. Obama's already killed family members of terrorists. He killed a 16-year-old kid in Yemen because his dad was a terrorist, and the kid hadn't even seen his dad by estimates of in like 2 years. The kid wasn't a terrorist. The kid got blown up by one of our drone strikes that Obama ordered. I mean, so a lot of the stuff that Trump is talking about, a lot of that's already there. I mean, the militarized police, we've already got all that going on. The infrastructure is there to do a lot of the stuff that he's already saying. You know, the domestic surveillance, you know, that stuff. We just found out that they've been using drones to fly surveillance missions in the United States. I mean, so a lot of the stuff that, as crazy as it sounds coming out of Trump's mouth, it only sounds crazy because he's being a little bit more upfront about it. I mean, this stuff's going on in secret. And you know, it's also one of the things that's going on with the media too, because when that happened with Obama, and you know, we took out Anwar al-Awlaki's kid, the media really gave him a pass on it. No one really challenged him on that. But when Trump says something like that, it's like, oh my God, Trump's gonna go do this stuff. Well, yeah, that's bad, but like, a lot of it's already going on.
I think the difference is, and I mean, I could be wrong, but I think the difference is, and at least it's this way for me, the difference between Obama, Bush, all of the other corrupt individuals that we've had in office, corrupt, warmongering individuals, they're there to feather their own nest. They're corrupt. Okay? Trump is appealing to an ideological base. And these aren't things that he wants to do and happens through the course of bureaucracy. This is his policy. He wants to set this as policy. That's where the issue comes in. You know, every government's tendency is to overreach. There will always be abuses. If you set the policy already at an abusive level, it's going to go beyond that. And the clearest indication that this is the way he thinks, at one of his most recent rallies, he said something to the effect of, punch that guy in the face and I'll pay your legal bills.
Right.
As a candidate, he's encouraging extra legal activity. He's encouraging people to break the law as a candidate because he knows he's immune. He's a rich guy. He'll buy his way out of it. And he knows that his money can buy somebody else's way out of it. With the implied immunity of the presidency, he will do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, to whoever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriot Act, I think, codified a certain amount of policy that the neoconservatives are able to push through. So I think we're definitely on track. But I mean, that's just paving the way for what Trump wants to do, which is using the fear of the other to create a sense of eternal fear at home. And that's what he's doing. And you're right, that's what he's launching upon. But yet, him offering to pay the legal bills is truly, truly disturbing that he hasn't received more flack for that.
And then, you know, it was just today that he said that if he didn't win the nomination, that there would be riots in the streets. I mean, so
right.
It is getting pretty crazy. We're coming down to the end here. Justin, where can people find and join up with this White Rose movement?
I would look under the hashtag White Rose Revolt. There's a couple of Facebook pages. There are links on in the article you guys are running tomorrow, and there's links on the fifth column.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for calling in, man. Glad to have you back. Hopefully you come back on soon. Make sure you catch us Monday through Friday here on UCY.TV, the Anti-Media Radio, tomorrow night with SM Gibson, Friday with LaVon. We're here 5 days a week, same place, same time. Peace out, everybody. Anti-Media.
Good night, Nick. Good night, Jake.
Peace, hi, Manny.
I'm gonna let them know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.